Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 280.
This week on the podcast, random hip-hop singers now claim they too could have turned on the lights in Puerto Rico faster than the government.
And if there's one thing we've ever agreed with Trump on, it's that the Dem memo is in fact too long.
Plus, can we hand Donald Trump a cheat sheet for other natural human responses to events and things?
And the Democrats are becoming their own predators in the California jungle primaries.
CPAC just out-CPAC'd itself, and now is just an existential joke about nothing.
And we've got our final week of painstaking sports coverage. We're so relieved and also devastated.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Welcome to the last week of Olympic sports coverage on Brain Trust Live.
But again, we're going to spare you and do it at the end.
Yeah, we know that not everyone is a figure skating obsessive, and that's fine.
Yeah.
I am the opposite, especially because I have recently become a truther in regards to the Canadian ice dancing team.
I know, I'm excited to hear about this because I haven't, so I'm ready for you.
You don't know about all the rumors.
No.
A lot of rumors. A lot of memes. A lot of everything.
Can't wait.
Before we begin, we want to remind you that Puerto Rico still doesn't have power.
No.
Only 83.8% of the island currently has power.
Yes, that's right.
The U.S. House Energy and Commerce Committee is going to hold a hearing on the 28th to discuss what exactly is going on here.
Yeah. But thankfully, someone is going to solve it for us.
Yeah.
If it's not the federal government, it's going to be AECOM.
That's right. AECOM, a singer that maybe not all of our listeners are even familiar with.
Who apparently does have potentially some credibility here.
He has an organization called AECOM Lighting Africa and basically was like, I could have gotten the power back 5 months quicker. I presented my plan to the government. They rejected it. Now look what happened.
Yeah.
And you know what? They still don't have power in Puerto Rico. So something didn't go right.
I'm surprised that this was not something that the Trump administration really jumped on
here.
He's a man who, like, you know, is friends with Dennis Rodman.
I know.
Mean, like, he can't.
Yeah, they couldn't.
He can't give AECOM a government contract to go turn the power on
right,
Puerto
like,
Rico?
What credible organizations are getting government contracts? None. Right? Like, why not get, like, AECOM at least seems to have a group.
I was going to say, I mean,
this seems to be their specialty.
Who was that company, Whitefish, that just had, like, one person
like
that
was just
basically
going around? Like, a guy in, like, Wyoming or Montana or something?
Yeah.
AECOM Lighting Africa is a group that is about providing lights to Africa. So
that's right.
Couldn't be more on the money.
Yeah.
In any case, that's what's going on in Puerto Rico. What's going on here is that the Dem memo got released this week.
Yeah, it did.
A redacted.
Yesterday, by the way, Saturday.
Yes, on Saturday. When
the
you
old
release
Saturday news day.
An important news story, yeah. It's 10 pages, which
it's like even worse than Friday night.
Yeah, no, Saturday is like a real, that's when you really want something to die.
Yeah.
It maybe would have killed itself, though, because it's too long. He's
right. It's too long. He was
boring.
Right about that.
Yeah, it's a boring, and I remember when it got released, I was reading the news. A few minutes later, I checked back to see if someone had gone over it quickly and, like, had some thoughts.
Yeah.
Took long for everyone to get their thoughts together because it was 10 pages.
There was no immediate, you know, article, like, five takeaways. There are now.
Right.
But
it took people days to go through to go through and find five takeaways, though. And basically,
also, are there five takeaways in
there? The takeaways are suspect, to say the
least.
Because
it boils down to, like, one specific thing that was what
all of the memos are dumb.
Well,
because all of the memos are specifically about one FISA court request for a warrant to investigate Carter Page.
Carter Page.
So, like, this couldn't be more specific and random.
Right. It doesn't have
Carter Page, who has been in bed with the Russian government for the whole time.
Right. The entire, that was how
all
he,
of time.
That's how he came into existence.
Yeah. Like,
Carter Page.
He was known before the Trump campaign.
A man who
existed.
Was like some sort of specialist on Russia who goes to Russia and takes Russian money to give speeches. And, like, that's why Carter Page was around.
Yeah, that's what Carter Page is.
Yeah.
So in any case, what this memo argues is that there was no bias in the FISA court application that ultimately got accepted to spy on Carter Page. Because with the GOP memo, as you might recall, or might not, because it's a boring topic, I'm not going to lie to you guys. the GOP memo basically said that they had evidence that the FBI's bias against Trump is part of why they accepted this application.
Yes.
The Dem memo is sort of like, no.
Right.
And we're going to talk about a couple of specific ways in which it disagrees with the GOP memo.
Sure.
We don't have all of the details because they redacted the Dem memo, whereas they did not redact any of the Republican memo because
Well, we didn't have much actual information in it.
That's true. And why not spread
mostly
secrets?
Mostly had Devin Nunes' sort of like thoughts and gut feelings about
things. Brian, it is Nunes.
Nunes.
You said Nunes, like a regular English speaker.
Nunes.
How dare you mispronounce his name?
Well, obviously,
that's so rude.
Obviously, neither of those ways are correct.
No.
Like, in reality.
He doesn't even have the anglicized pronunciation of his own name right.
No.
Like, that's what's so frustrating about that whole thing. Is it's like, okay, you're not going to say Nunes. You're an asshole, but whatever. If you're going to say Nunes, though, don't say Nunes.
No.
That's blatantly wrong.
That's
I just don't even know what to do about that.
Yeah.
In any case, they disagree on a couple things. One is how important the Steele dossier was in terms of this Carter Page FISA application. One of the reasons that they're claiming that the FBI was being biased is because they were accepting evidence from the Steele dossier, which was commissioned by Fusion GPS and was paid for by the Clinton campaign.
Yeah. And it's important to remember because, like, that is the dossier that obviously sort of, like, became a news event because it was
Golden
the one that
showers.
Had it, because it had all of the... Right, yes. And, like, but what is important to remember in all of this is that a lot of the information that was in that dossier has now been verified.
Exactly.
It's not as if it was, like, all... you know, insane stories about, like, Donald Trump's sexual proclivities while he was, like, seeing Russian hookers. Like, there's information in there that was valuable and accurate.
Yeah. And some of that information includes Carter Page's relationship with Russian spies, interactions with Russian officials, and things that he did during the campaign, because Carter Page was on the Trump campaign.
That's right.
While
he was one
being
of their foreign policy advisors.
While being a Russian person. a Russia person.
Right.
It also talks about whether the Justice Department told the FISA court about Steele's political motivations when they filed this application. The Nunes memo says that they didn't mention that he had connections to the Clinton campaign and to the DNC. The Schiff memo said that's wrong.
Right. Well, and Nunes.
Yeah.
Even days after his own memo came out, said on television that it was noted.
Yeah.
In the I think it was like as a footnote or something like that or whatever. But like they were able to tell where this information came from, the FISA court. So and he even acknowledged it. He just sort of like tried to basically like he was just basically saying that it wasn't sort of like, you know, in like bold font underlined.
No one highlighted
basically.
It.
Like, right. Exactly. Yeah.
The most hilarious point of disagreement in the memos has to do with a Yahoo News article because the Justice Department references a Yahoo News article in the application. And the Nunes memo includes this as a point to prove that they're like not serious, basically, to show that they're being like Looney Tunes idiots.
Yeah.
And the Yahoo News article that they reference actually is using the Steele dossier as its source. So, like, it's basically claiming that they were submitting the article as evidence about the Steele dossier that is the source of the article. Like, it doesn't make any sense. The Schiff memo says that the article was actually cited because it has a quote about Carter Page's or from Carter Page's own public denials about his Russia activities.
Right.
But I love that a Yahoo News article would be in any way in the linchpin here.
Right?
Like that seems ridiculous.
Yeah, it does.
But also they disagree on how much of the Steele dossier was corroborated. The Schiff memo doesn't dispute that the Steele dossier had not been verified when it was mentioned in the FISA application, but they do point out that later U.S. investigators corroborated most of it.
Right. Well, and also I think it mentions this in this memo, but we've talked about it and all of the world has talked about it, that the FISA court, regardless of this sort of like everybody sort of getting all up in arms about like this first FISA court ruling.
Right.
But every single FISA court after it'd been like renewed like four times, they were all judges that had been nominated by Republicans.
Yeah.
To the FISA court. So it's sort of like, it's almost like, yes, I get why maybe if you were grasping at straws, you might use this as the thing to get hung up on. But it's like,
said. Right, we talked about this during the GOP memo.
You know, we've now had to read 14 pages about this, and it seems to be a big, you know, non-event. Entirely. Like, I understand why Schiff felt like there had to be a response from the Democrats because there was so much misinformation in the Republican memo, but also it's just sort of like
both memos
I wish that
are
we could
boring.
Be living in a time where neither of these existed.
So true. Yeah, well, especially the last point of disagreement has to do with the Associate Deputy Attorney General at the time and whether or not he was friends with Steele, basically. And it's like, that's just too annoying of a point to even go into.
Yeah.
That's the all, like the whole thing is just like a disagreement about whether right. or not Steele was chatting, was gossiping with his friends before or after this FISA right. court application came through.
Oh boy.
In any case, Trump was furious about having himself released this, I guess.
That's right.
And decided,
having to read 10 pages.
And having to read,
or be told about yeah, 10 pages.
He certainly didn't read 10
I'm
pages.
Sure, it was
Let's
reduced
not
to one page
kid ourselves.
With bullet points.
And that all said Trump in them.
Yeah.
But he called into Jeanine Pirro's show again
right.
to just like rant about stuff this weekend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of amazing.
Yeah, it was.
It starts with the Schiff memo. Like, that's the initial intent of the call. He calls Schiff a leaker, even though, again, Trump had to okay the release of this.
Yeah.
And that also the entire Senate House Intelligence Committee also approved
it. Right. The House Intelligence Committee, we should remind you, approved it before it was redacted unanimously.
Correct.
So.
And also, if anyone are leakers in the House Intelligence Committee, it's the Nunes side that released their memo without Democratic consent.
That's right.
He called Schiff a bad guy. He said that he was doing stuff that was, quote, probably illegal.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure.
Right.
But it might be.
I've just realized another error in his ridiculous nickname for Adam Schiff that he has, because it's little. Adam Schiff.
Adam Schiff's not
little. D.D. Ellie.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense.
Which isn't a word.
Which is stupid. But, like, you can't say it. It has to be spelled.
It has to be. Also.
For you to get that it's a nickname, even though it still doesn't make sense at that point once you see it spelled.
Don't forget about the apostrophe at the end of little.
Right,
that's
exactly.
the most important part of the spelling of the word.
It doesn't read on television.
No. No, yeah.
Yeah.
Trump called the memo a nothing. He said that was a very bad document for their side.
Very bad. And you know how he loves to read documents. Does a lot of document
reading.
He would
know a lot about what makes a good or bad document.
That's right.
That's one thing we know about Donald Trump.
Yep. Yep.
He said that if things continue, Nunes will be very greatly honored.
What does that mean?
It also seems to not understand what his argument is. Because
it's so funny. Like, this
he
is
said
what I just...
there was nothing to do with Russians in his campaign.
Right. And Jeanine Pirro agreed. She said, clearly all the evidence points
to
that. But then he also... The thing that he has been doing lately, because Schiff sort of started this for him, and it's not inaccurate, but, you know, he has been sort of throwing Obama under the bus, blaming, you know, the right will blame Obama for everything. And there's some blame to be had here about not doing anything sort of like, or at least actively enough when we knew that the Russians were like trying to meddle in the election. But you can't say that the Russians weren't meddling in the election and then blame Obama for letting... the Russians meddle in the election.
Right. You can only get one of those.
That's right. You have to pick one.
That's right.
They either didn't meddle.
Right. If you cooperated with the Russians, then you can say that it was Obama's fault.
Right.
If you did not, then there was no Russian meddling.
That's
Everything's
right.
fine.
Right.
No one, there's
no
blame. You can't blame anyone for that.
But that's a hard concept for Jeanine Pirro viewers to
wrap
their heads around, I think, probably. So he's getting away with it fine there.
Yeah.
But we would just... you know, like to point that out.
Right. Also, she asked him if there was going to be a parade.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that we should celebrate our increased military spending.
Oh, sure.
Said, we'll have a tremendous, updated, top of the line. There'll be nothing like it.
Top of the line what, though?
Didn't put a noun in that sentence, so we'll never know.
All right, good. All right. Yeah.
So that's what the parade so far is just going to be a tremendous, updated, top of the line, nothing like it, something.
Period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the gun control excitement continued this week. We... have three events coming up that are going to be mass actions around gun control. There's going to be a walkout on March 14th. There's going to be a big protest on Capitol Hill and around the country on March 24th. I think it's May 20th, not April 20th, right? That is the other walkout.
I think that's right.
It's the anniversary of Columbine.
Yeah.
So there's going to be another walkout then.
Yeah.
A lot of exciting opportunities to just up and fucking walk out
if
you
right.
are in the mood.
Yeah.
I would say that it's something, it, you know, it's being conceived of as a student thing, but I would say you could walk out of your office too.
Yeah.
Anyone could walk out. There's nothing I like better than just like walking out.
Leaving a place.
I like striking. I like walking out.
Uh-huh.
It's one of the things that I feel most empowered while doing.
Uh-huh.
But the Parkland students are fucking organized.
They.
As shit.
Yeah.
They.
Well, and
took,
you, I would like to give credit when credit is due. Because,
to me?
Yes, to
yes.
you. I know. I knew you'd
fucking
love that.
Awesome.
Because you called this.
I did.
Like, as soon as this happened, you were like, there has not been one of these sort of like recently that has, you know, been at high school or just in terms of like that's going to leave an entire group of, you know, students pissed off that are of an age that have the ability to do something.
Yeah. Well, and also, this was like, this has so many of the things that you need. Like, clearly, this is a community that's well off enough to find the money to get a bus caravan together immediately, to find, has access to media, things that a lot of the communities that have been struck by smaller acts of gun violence have not had.
Yeah.
They have, this is a good school.
Well,
that has students that are prepared and to sort of handle this kind of pressure.
Well, right, and that's the thing that I found so interesting this week, actually, was that because they have all been so impressive, you have to take debate.
Yeah.
At the in these schools, they last fall debated gun control.
Right.
Like
they were fucking
like,
ready.
There's an article like in the Miami Herald about like how they all had like these very detailed Word documents, like digging into the pros and cons of gun control with statistics and blah, blah, blah. Like they literally just did this in class months ago.
Yeah.
So
they came ready.
Yeah.
And we're talking about literally like a week after the event. They're still attending funerals in their spare time.
Right.
And they organized a caravan of 100 students by bus.
Many of them got on that bus from funerals.
Yes. Yeah. With media on the bus with them.
Right.
Every major
some
news
of them
network
went,
traveled with them.
Some of them went from funerals to hand an elected United States senator their ass on public television. Like,
yeah.
These kids are good.
Yeah. They're fucking killing it right now.
Yeah. Also, they're theater kids, too. Did you know that?
I did know that. Yeah. And also, I didn't have to know that because I knew it without knowing it.
No,
I knew it before I knew it.
Yeah. Not theater kids in that they're actors, like the right would have us believe.
No.
Actors. They're not crisis actors.
They are actually high school
students.
They're
actors.
Right.
Yeah. Like one of them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Fiddler on the Roof actors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although one of them said that we would know that they weren't crisis actors if we had seen their school production
of Fiddler
on
the
Roof.
I know.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
But in any case, so they did this impressive caravan down to the state capitol.
Yep.
They went and met with their electeds. They watched in horror as they took a vote on gun control from the gallery and they watched in horror from the gallery as the state assembly took a vote on gun control and it went down in flames.
Yep. 71 to 36. Wasn't
it
close?
It
was just to move forward on debate too, by the way.
Yeah, right. This
about banning assault,
but
assault rifles.
Those images are so powerful of the kids in the gallery watching this. Like that was the worst thing that the state legislature could have done to themselves in that moment.
Yeah.
Because
the second worst thing that they could have done was immediately afterward declaring porn a public health
risk. That they also did.
Yeah.
They doubled down on their idiocy immediately.
Right. Yes.
Porn,
it's funny because the statement, if you swap in gun control for where I'm going to read pornography right now, it will make more sense than the word pornography does. But unfortunately, the word pornography is the one that
unfortunately,
is in there.
Unfortunately, Florida.
Yeah. It says, this bill recognizes public health risks created by pornography and acknowledges need for education, prevention, research, and policy change to protect citizens of this state. Pornography.
Yeah.
In the same legislative
session. The scourge of pornography.
With children crying in the gallery
after
not
having
passing gun control.
Come directly from
public safety
funerals of their friends and classmates who were killed in an episode of gun violence. But things are slowly and too slowly starting to blow up in everyone's face. And because of that, Rick Scott even sort of has tepidly been talking about some very minor and kind of dumb forms of gun control just to kind of like, because you really can't do nothing in the face of all of this. You can try. They've been trying.
Right. Well, and exactly. They have been trying. And the one thing that I'll say about that is that like, we can talk ourselves to we're blue in the face about sort of like what comprehensive gun control looks like. But I will sort of like, I do want to give them a small bit of credit because to a degree so many on the right talking about gun control is similar to how we feel about abortion on the left, in the sense that as soon as you do something like this, as soon as you ban an assault rifle or as soon as you do anything like that, it becomes a slippery slope.
Right.
They're very slippery slope about the whole gun control situation,
right,
which is the reason why they have sort of pretended like they would do something and then basically only done nothing and then ultimately never actually do anything in the first place.
Right.
It's because they don't want to. And the fact that Rick Scott was like, we're going to do gun
getting
control.
Getting on the slope.
Right? Exactly. They're getting on the slope. So, I'm going to let them have it. Do they have to do more? God, yes. But, like, I mean, yeah, it's like, let's, true. Let's get well, it going. Let's get it going.
It's like how I always say, like, you, like, once, and this has been disproven, but I think will be ultimately reproven, which is once you give people a right, it's much harder to take it away than it is to give them more of that right. So, like, sure. Once you give people access to affordable health care, it's going to be real rough when we all find out it's going to be expensive again.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to take it away from us. They're going to, yeah. They can do it right now because the effects aren't immediate. As soon as the right. effects are immediate, it's going to get dangerous again for them.
Yeah.
It's easier to move in the right direction if you get everyone onto the slope in the right. first place. Like, yes. that, and yes. that's, you know, like, with the gun control thing, everyone's been so absolutist that I think you're right.
Right.
Like, just being willing to admit that any limitations on your right to carry any weapon you want and right. do anything you want with it is an admission that it is okay to restrict that.
Right.
And once, yes. and then the conversation is just, and that's what, you know, that is true. That's what we say on the left about abortion. That's why right. I faulted Hillary Clinton for saying that right. she was in support of some
right.
late term abortion bans. Cause I was like, once you're policing women's bodies, you're doing it. You're admitting that's an acceptable thing for right. the government to do.
Yes.
And then the conversation is suddenly, when is what it okay to do that?
Right, exactly.
And not, yeah. is it okay to do that?
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, you're right. That's something yeah. that we're hopefully going to talk about here. That
yeah.
CNN has been, by the way, CNN has been great about getting town halls together immediately about hot button issues.
They really have.
CNN organized yeah. the town hall on a
yeah.
on a dime.
They did.
That yeah. brought together all of the Parkland kids. It brought together parents. And then yeah. Bill Nelson.
And, like, there were a few thousand people there. It was
yeah,
huge.
It was huge.
I didn't
huge.
Realize it was going to be the case. And then it, like, came on, and I was like, oh, they're, like, in some stadium somewhere.
Yeah, they basically, like, got a stadium together.
Oh, God.
And then got Bill Nelson, the senator from, uh-huh. the lesser-known senator from
yep.
Florida, Marco Rubio, who maybe regrets having shown up at this
I
event.
I wrote in my notes for this, like, Marco Rubio, who regretted every life decision that had led
yeah,
him,
right.
to, led him to being there, basically.
Ted Deutch, the representative, and then Dana Loesch, the NRA spokesperson.
Yes.
Who I also am impressed the NRA showed up at this event
yeah.
at all. They tried uh-huh. to show up with in a pretty female form so that they would
did.
Feel confused. Yeah. Everyone would feel confused by that.
Yeah.
But these kids asked some of the most pointed and important questions. Like, usually, there's a point at which you become so, like, hands up in the air, we can't do anything about this, that people have stopped even asking the most basic and obvious questions about
right.
gun control.
Yes.
Like, things
right.
that...
Like, can you agree that it was a gun that killed these people?
Yes.
Like, was
things
literally,
like
a question that Marco Rubio was mostly attempting to dodge.
Exactly.
Right? I mean...
Yeah, like, they asked really direct and well-conceived questions that are
yeah.
things that we have even forgotten to
yeah.
ask from now, you know,
right.
of late.
Yeah.
And they, like, there were times that the electeds talked circles around, you know, talked their circles.
Yeah.
But these kids did not let
yeah.
them off the hook.
And the crowd didn't let them off the hook either.
No.
Because they were not afraid to boo. They were not afraid to tell
right.
Dana Loesch that she was a murderer.
<That's> yeah.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was all, you know, it was all the sort of Emma Gonzalez kids.
Right.
She's like a real, she currently,
yeah.
thanks to a massive online drive, has more followers on Twitter than the NRA.
Yeah.
She went, when I followed her like a few days ago, just because I was like, she probably seems like someone who's, should we follow?
Yeah.
She had 10,000 followers. She now has yeah. 552,000,
oh
I think. Like,
she's also the head of their Gay Straight Alliance.
She
by
sure
the way.
Is. Yeah.
yeah. Mm-hmm. Good for her.
Yeah. She's, yeah. She made a joke like she was the president of the, there was a joke and I've already forgotten the punchline.
Yeah, sure.
But in any case, it was a really interesting event, in part just because it was
yeah.
the first sort of, it wasn't a constructive conversation about gun control necessarily, but it was the first sort of explicit conversation
right.
that I feel like I've seen in years.
Right, and it didn't really have to be. I mean,
no.
I think what good came from that was people like Marco Rubio having to look these people in the face.
Yes.
So
well, and also
he
us
was
on
sort of...
television watching him look a 17-year-old in the face, as opposed
yeah.
to, like, when you are in the news, when you're hearing these kids got called crisis actors and you hear them, you know,
right.
on the radio and they're very
right.
articulate and they
yeah.
seem very old because of
right.
that, you forget that they are kids. And in this
right.
format, it was clear they were kids.
Right.
And
exactly.
so it was just impressive.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, there were a lot of this had huge sort of like social media play.
Yes.
I mean, it was, there were so many like great moments from this, but like really mostly around Marco Rubio. Like,
yeah.
I mean, he really was just like,
Marco
because
Rubio's
obviously
not good
he
in a
was
crisis.
The person, like, obviously he, of the people there, like that's who you're going to take issue with. I mean, you can certainly, you know, shout at the NRA lady that she's a murderer, like, fine. But,
right,
like,
but like, she he's is, the so, one, like, fine, whatever.
Right, yeah. But, like, he's the one who sort of, like, you need,
yeah,
ultimately.
And also,
sort
who
of,
gets
like,
the most
you,
money
who
from
gets
the NRA.
The most money. Right, exactly. And that was one of the, like, the very first thing that he got asked was, are you going to stop taking money from the NRA? And then he, like, gave some answers that, like, definitely got booed.
And made
where
no sense.
Where he said, I know, exactly. He said something to the effect of, like,
like, people buy into my agenda,
oh,
not
right.
my...
Yeah, it's not money that, you know, I'm getting, or it's not, you know, they're not buying, yeah, they're not buying influence.
They're buying into my agenda.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, huh?
Yeah.
What?
No,
yeah.
He tried to talk circles,
yeah.
And it's hard to talk circles around a simple question.
Well, right, exactly.
That's the thing that's so genius.
Yeah,
we talked about this all the time during the presidential campaign.
Right?
Hillary Clinton couldn't answer a simple question.
No.
And her answer seemed insane in context.
That's right.
Because the Sanders campaign would just be like, we're against fracking.
Right.
And then she would be like, here's a 20-minute answer that doesn't answer the question. And
right.
That's what Rubio was doing here.
Yes.
Because he can't.
He can't. He can't.
He can't admit that his political position requires him to deny that guns cause mass shootings.
That's right. Yeah.
He can't admit that the common sense thing that you would think is.
Right. Or that the NRA is not giving him money because they want him to do things for them.
Right. Like that lobbying
right?
doesn't work the way it
right,
works.
Exactly. They just like him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just buy into his agenda.
Yeah. It's just,
he was already rabidly pro-gun.
That's right.
And they're just paying him because they appreciate him.
That's right. Yeah.
You know how companies mm-hmm. and organizations often pay you because they
yeah.
just appreciate your time.
That's right.
They just love you.
Mm-hmm.
But so in any case, Trump also tried to hold a forum of sorts on the gun control issue.
Oh, boy.
He held a listening session.
Oh, boy.
Where yeah. students and families from Parkland came to the White House.
Yeah.
And he got kind of dragged on the internet because he was holding a note card.
Yeah. You know what?
And
yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm giving him a pass on the holding of a note card.
Sure.
Like, I mean, would Obama have needed the note card? Probably not.
No.
But it is also not so insane to show up to something like that and feel like you need some notes.
Sure.
Like, you want to, like, you want to have some information. You maybe want to remember, like, while you're having a conversation with somebody that you want to say a specific thing. And
right.
so, like, the first thing that was on the note card said, what did it say? Oh, he said, what would you most want me to know about your experience? Which is, like, that's a good leading question. Like, that's a good number one on the note card.
I would contend that as a professional human whose job it is to, on some level, listen in this way.
Well, yes.
He shouldn't have needed a note card for even that.
I agree.
Like, I don't
right.
think I can even admit that
right.
you might want a note card
right.
if
sure.
you were holding a listening session with Parkland students
yeah.
and parents, because you are not the professional president of the United States.
Sure. I just want to make sure that we drag him
for
the
right
thing.
Sure. Right.
Which, for me, isn't the note card or point number one on the note card.
Right.
Or even point number two
right.
on the note card, which was sort of obscured, but seemed like it probably said, what can we do to help you feel safe? Which is another solid question to be asking
right.
these people.
Both good questions.
Number three and number four on the note, these were numbered, which
right.
is I'm
problematic in its own
yeah,
way.
Exactly.
I'm
surprised he didn't say, number one, what would you like us to do? But anyway, we couldn't see number three and number four
right.
by how he was holding it in his hand. But number five is what we're dragging him for.
Yes, and that is what the internet was dragging him
right.
for.
True, but a lot of people were just sort of like, oh, he had to show up with a note card. And I was sort of like, yeah, I mean, I get that, sure. Like, don't have to have 5 points on a note card,
right.
like when you're listening to people who just, like,
right.
were in
but
a mass shooting.
But we're dealing with, like, an idiot.
We're dealing
already.
With an actual
yeah.
idiot, and we know that now at this
right.
point. So, like, but point number five says only, I hear you. So, like, a man who called a, quote, listening session to listen to people had to be reminded to tell the people that he was listening to them. That's
and
what
also
happens.
Had to be given the actual words to you to like you, the words he used to express human empathy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
that's
he,
the thing. Like, how many times have you had a conversation where like someone has told you something and you're like, "I hear you."
Yeah,
I hear. I'm I
all
hear
the
you.
Time.
I'm here for you.
I hear you.
I'm gonna. That's, I hear you. Yeah. Like that's just like a. That's a thing that you say when
also,
somebody tells you something.
There's like,
when you're
I
listening,
have,
that's what you say.
I have like instinctive reactions of empathy sometimes where I'm like, that sounds terrible. I'm so sorry you went through that.
That's
things
right.
like that.
Yeah.
Things that regular humans say to each other when we tell people about
when
terrible things that happen.
Tragedy. Right.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I'm so sorry to hear this.
Yeah.
So many things you can say. These
right.
these just those were off the top of my head. I didn't
yeah.
even have note cards for those.
Yeah.
I could go on all day like this.
Right.
But
It seemed like you should have had, like, point number one should have just said, like, you are currently sitting in a listening session.
Right. Do what you think
listeners
do.
Act accordingly.
Right.
Like,
but he wouldn't have known what that meant.
No, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, if, like, I feel like point number one should have been, like, come into the room and sit in a chair.
Right, I know. Exactly.
Make eye contact with one to two people in the room to show that you're paying attention.
Uh-huh. Number three could have said, don't say that your solution was to arm teachers.
Right. But he didn't get that memo.
He didn't get that
this
memo.
This is, by the way, an NRA talking point that has been allowed to flourish for too long.
That's right.
And remember, we've been down this road before because Betsy DeVos got dragged for claiming that teachers needed guns to protect students from grizzly bears when she first took office.
Yeah.
So this isn't the first time this has come up. Uh-uh. But Donald Trump said of teachers having guns, you give them a little bit of a bonus. So practically for free, you now have made the school into a hardened target.
No.
What is that? Like, a hardened target is a, like, using the word target doesn't seem right there.
No.
No. He said that 10 to 40% of school employees would be qualified to handle a weapon. No data on that, by the way. That's just his feelings about the matter.
To which teachers everywhere said, can I maybe get some school supplies instead?
Right. Like, we're going to, because he said he would put federal money into training them.
Yeah, pay for this.
He's going to pay for the training of the teachers with the guns.
Right.
Teachers then, rightfully, were like, can you pay for the paper?
Right. Or my salary.
Or my salary.
Maybe anything. Anything. Use that money for actually anything other than that.
Now, common sense tells you this is insane.
Yes.
But common sense isn't the only thing we have to tell us this is insane.
We also have proof. Yeah.
In the form of two stories.
That's right.
The first about, and I'm sure that you heard the story if you're like a human being in the world, but there was an armed sheriff's deputy at the high school in Parkland during the shooting.
Yes.
He resigned last Thursday because surveillance video showed that he never even tried to enter the school to confront the shooter.
No.
Now, turns out. Can I blame him?
No. It turns out that just regular Joes, and he's not even a regular Joe, he's an actual sheriff's deputy, aren't trying to enter an active shooter with an automatic rifle situation.
No, and rightfully so, because all that would have happened is he would have gotten shot.
That's right.
There's no way that he personally, with his one person worth of training.
There also might have been 25 deaths,
exactly,
too, had he gone in there.
Well, as you recall, the New York City police,
the
stat that I love to quote is about the time that one guy was waving one gun in front of the Empire State Building and like eight people got shot by the police.
Wasn't there that stat this week?
Yeah,
that
like
they have
the
like
target
an 18%
they can't fucking hit a target.
Hit
it's
yeah,
hard
exactly.
to hit a target, especially a moving target.
Yeah, with an AR-15.
And especially if you are not sure that you have the right kid, because once again, this kid was just a kid like every other kid in that school, so it would take you a second to even register which was the right kid.
It's ridiculous to think, especially with the speed at which you can kill people with an AR-15, it's ridiculous to think that like one person or even a teacher in a different room would be able to do anything effectively about this.
Well, and this actually, well, let's talk about the second story, and then the sort of final issue with arming teachers that I think is a good point that didn't get enough discussion on the internet, I will mention after. But first, there was a kind of hilarious, despite its tragedy, story of a Utah teacher who was armed.
That's right.
Was ready for any kind of attacker.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, while using the bathroom before students arrived for the day, shot themselves in the foot.
That's right. Oh, in the foot, too.
Like,
right?
I know, they're like a metaphor for terribleness.
Exactly.
But the thing that I think was not discussed enough about this, except on super progressive corners of the internet, is the fact that arming teachers exacerbates a problem with profiling kids that we already have in the classroom. Who is going to get shot when there is a gunshot fired and no one knows where it comes from?
Yeah.
You're going to see students of color get shot. You're
going
to see, especially men of color. Like, you are going to suddenly exacerbate a problem we already have with not giving fair, you know, and with tracking students of color, with not giving sort of equal and fair educations to students of color.
Yeah.
You are now going to see a bunch of scared shitless teachers going into schools and assuming the danger is coming from the people that they have been taught the danger is always coming from. And
but
that only puts students more at danger.
And also, a follow-up point on that, it's always the white kid.
Always. It's a white man who does these.
So,
it's you like, can't, don't.
You would be doing it wrong
every
by shooting the brown
you would
one.
Be doing it wrong.
Exactly. Literally every single time.
School shootings are a white man's art, if you will.
I will.
Yeah, that's what the stats show us, you guys.
That's right.
But there is already a problem with armed security at schools, treating students of color unfavorably, profiling them unfairly, things like that. We already have this problem in the schools. That is already an issue we're facing. to add a layer of teachers having to make, like, we know police officers make the wrong snap decisions about this all the time.
Of course.
That's why black men and women get shot in the streets for no reason all the time.
Yeah.
That's, we, like, to add, to compound the danger of the school environment that we're currently facing because of all the guns by adding the concern that your poor little, you know, daughter or son who's just trying to go and be fucking good at math is also going to be the first person on the target, you know, when something weird goes on in the classroom, when a loud noise happens. When I mean, we thought there was a shooting at the LA at LAX at one point because people were clapping loud for Usain Bolt.
That's right.
I mean, once everyone's armed, shit gets dangerous very fast.
That's right. Yeah. Well, it also, like, this first story, too, about the sheriff's deputy, it really sort of, like, you know, their favorite narrative is the good guy with the gun.
Yeah. And a good guy with a gun can't do anything if they're dead.
Time and time, well, right, exactly. And time and time again, we have seen good guys with guns either do nothing or shoot someone else or whatever it is that they do that is not actually save the situation.
Right.
You know, so I feel like there's so many things wrong with, so many things wrong with arming teachers, but there's also just, like, things that are very, like base level wrong about, like, all of their arguments about guns in general.
Right.
That I feel like we proved this week. Right. Yes.
The logic of more guns making a situation safer.
Right. Yeah.
Is the wrong logic.
Yeah.
But the NRA is finally starting to face the Fox News style blowback.
They are. Yes.
Because as we know, we've gotten rid of a lot of terrible Fox News personalities by boycotting their sponsors.
That's right.
Well, the NRA is suddenly on the under the knife, if you will, of the consumerist public because suddenly a lot of companies that provide deals to the NRA.
Corporate sponsors are, well, not all of them.
Not enough of them. But are starting to cut out.
Yeah, the big ones really sort of mostly are. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they do sort of a thing where, like,
It's like
AAA or AARP. They sort of like they offer deals on car rentals, flights, whatever
hotels,
it is that they do. Yeah, exactly.
Whatever it is.
Yeah. So people were like, let's get into this.
Yeah.
Let's dig in here
exactly.
And see who's offering these things.
And companies, as soon as it all became public, started dropping out
immediately.
The First National Bank of Omaha, who underwrites their branded Visa card,
they were the first
to get out of the game.
And then Enterprise. And then the big ones came.
It turns out
next.
Enterprise owns
all of the
car rental agencies.
Rental companies.
So when Enterprise dropped out, it meant Alamo and National also dropped out.
Mm-hmm.
Hertz has dropped out since then. Avis and Budget. The rent-a-car companies are gone, by the way.
All of them.
All of them are gone.
Avis and Budget, rent-a-car, also owned by the same company.
Yeah, also owned
Not
by
the same company as Enterprise. The same company as each other.
As they're owned by Avis, I think, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Seems like Hertz is the only one that is...
just like an independent...
right.
But Delta and United did... there are a bunch of, like, home security
and they were big ones. Delta and United... those were sort of, a lot of these have just sort of, like, dropped out because, like, I think they saw sort of, like, the social pressure of, like, the whole situation happening. Like, obviously no one was, like, you know, out there really going in. There wasn't a huge social media campaign for Paramount RX because nobody knows who that is anyway.
Exactly.
But, like, Delta and United sort of, like, after some of the rental car companies, like, dropped out, like, they were the next sort of like in the firing squad, if you will. Like
they were the public.
They were in the and there's one currently right now for FedEx who hasn't dropped out. Like we've moved from one thing to the next here, and it's always the next biggest company, obviously.
Yeah, because Starkey hearing aids were not on the chopping block because no one knows what they are.
That's right.
But there are
you wouldn't need the hearing aids probably if you're an NRA member if you weren't shooting a lot of guns.
I would guarantee
all the time.
That most of the NRA membership is upwards of 700 years old. So maybe there's already.
It's like,
I bet Starkey has all sorts of deals with every one of these companies because the AARP certainly could use hearing aids.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But
MetLife.
MetLife.
SimpliSafe, which is like a home security system, which is also hilarious because shouldn't your gun be that?
Exactly.
People?
Yeah, you need to also pay for extra home security.
Right.
Probably you do because your guns can be easily taken from you and then used against you.
Right, exactly.
Harlan Clark, which they're a check printing company and they print NRA branded checks.
Don't be going around with guns on your checks.
Absolutely.
And don't
accept an NRA branded check. That's a time to be like, we don't take checks.
Yeah. That's right.
The companies that haven't pulled out yet are companies that the next sort of big push has been directed at NRA TV, which is a streaming service.
Yeah. It's like a channel, basically.
Yeah, it's like a streaming channel. It's like a digital channel.
Right, exactly. That all of the streaming services carry.
Right, so Apple,
like you can get
Amazon,
it on Apple TV, you can
Roku,
get it on your Fire TV. Right.
Chromecast.
Right.
They all carry it. And the next big thing is a push for them to drop the channel.
Right.
And we're going to give you a list of companies that haven't left yet, because that's where we're directing our efforts. Besides,
right, exactly.
Besides this
NRA
TV.
Congratulations to all the people that have left. But like, let's now move our ire elsewhere.
Exactly. Bass Pro Shops.
Yeah. And Cabela's, which is
whatever those
apparently
are.
An outdoor shop.
Those
but it's
are not
owned
things
by Bass.
That we know about, by the way.
No,
don't
not.
Ask us. About
I mean,
that.
I know of Bass Pro Shops, obviously, and have even
right.
been in a Bass Pro
That's
Shop.
Weird.
But they're in Iowa.
I mean, they would be. That's
yeah.
exactly where I imagine you would
sure.
find a Bass Pro Shop, but I don't
yeah.
know what you'd find inside of it.
Well, I mean, you would go there, like, if you were going to buy something for it. You would go there for a thing that you would go to REI here for.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean? So it's like, you would go in if you were sort of, like, say,
sporting
going,
person.
You were going camping or you were doing something like
this
that.
This is
so
where
it's
you
not
me
so,
again.
It's not so insane to have just, like, been a regular Joe Blow in Iowa and have been into a Bass Pro Shop.
FedEx is, as we said, the big one. There's
yeah.
Clearant, which is a credit card processing service.
Yep.
Hotel Planner, which is a discount site that offers hotel chain
yeah.
discounts, as their name indicates.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Hyatt Regency Hotel in Dallas, where they're holding their convention
right.
in
and
May.
And that's just the specific one. There's, like, Hyatt Regency does not have, like, a deal
right.
with the NRA, like, as a company. But, like, people are sort of, like, being like, hey, Hyatt, like, maybe don't have the NRA convention.
Yeah.
So.
And then SiriusXM
yeah.
Has an NRA TV show that airs on its Patriot station.
Conservative
which
station.
Is a conservative
right.
station.
Yeah.
And they are also facing pressure to
yeah.
get rid of that
Drop
show.
That. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll learn of others. And
yeah.
also, this is, at a certain point, that kind of, The pocketbook pressure really does work.
That's what
this is
yeah.
capitalism, you guys.
That's right.
Capitalism means that you can get O'Reilly off the air if you can get to his sponsors.
Yep.
The NRA obviously doesn't work on exactly that model, but
it
is going to make it hard for them to do business when all of the perks that they're offering their members
well, right.
disappear
and
the members are still paying membership fees.
Right. That's the thing. Because if you one of the reasons why you would be willing to pay a membership fee into the NRA is because you're going to get some things
exactly.
like this. Like I. One of the things I enjoy about AAA
exactly.
is that I know if I'm going to book a hotel, I probably am going to get a AAA discount.
Exactly.
If that's one of the only reasons that you feel like you need to be an NRA member, other than the shitty magazine that they send you every month
right.
that I'm sure probably just goes in the trash, there's no reason to continue paying your, NRA dues every month or year,
yeah.
or however often you have to.
Yeah.
Pay
Let's
this.
Not even
Who
find
knows?
Out.
Let's,
Let's
find
never
out.
Find that out.
Yeah.
But so, and it's starting. There are some. Indications that the political tide is starting to change as well.
Yeah.
This week it was announced that Chris Harris, who represents Pike County in Pennsylvania, right?
Kentucky,
sorry.
Yeah.
That is a county that Trump won with 80% of the vote.
Yep.
And Chris Harris has an A rating from the NRA, but he started backing away and saying he wants to see a ban on assault rifles, he wants to see us outlaw bump stocks, and he wants deeper background checks. And he basically was like, this has become an issue of common sense. And he
yeah.
kind of said he's willing to give up his A rating from the NRA over it. And
yeah.
that's in a county that 80% of the county
right.
voted for Donald Trump.
He said he's giving it up for Lent.
Right. Oh, yeah.
his A NRA rating.
Yeah. yeah. Exactly. And he also even co-sponsored a bill that would end Kentucky's practice of auctioning off murder weapons
yeah.
to the public.
You guys, this is real. This
yeah.
is a thing that happens.
That's a...
It's upsetting.
Crazy.
That law, allows, just now, there was a recent Kentucky school shooting in which two children were killed and 14 others were wounded. They're auctioning off that gun.
Yeah. That gun shouldn't
what?
Be left to see another day.
No.
Did you see the video of the guy sawing his gun in half?
No.
Or circular saw. I mean, it was a power tool.
Oh, yeah,
tool.
Sure. Right,
I don't know the name of that power tool.
Sure.
But he does this long thing about how...
It wasn't a handsaw.
And it's a very touching video, actually, because he kind of sits there and he's like, after... Whatever, one of the, Sandy Hook, I said I would happily give up my gun to just save one more life, and then I didn't do it.
Yeah.
And obviously those were empty words. But he was like, this time.
Yeah.
And then saws his
nice.
Gun in half on camera, and then
Good.
It went
that's
viral.
And that's what we need.
Yeah.
Don't just, let's get rid of them.
Yeah.
Destroy them.
Exactly. Make
right.
it so that
Melt
the gun
them.
Isn't shot by someone else
right,
to kill
exactly.
all the people, just
yes.
not you. Make it so the gun itself stops being a gun itself.
Yeah, that's right.
Pat
yeah.
Robertson just said he would
that
support
was a
an
huge
assault weapon
shocker.
Ban.
I watched that
yeah.
video, and I was holy
there
cow.
Are, we mentioned Rick Scott, but if people
yeah.
like Pat Robertson are starting to back away from this,
yeah.
absolutist position on
yeah.
gun control, then it's going to be hard for the right to pull, like, there will be people on the right that don't do shit because right. there always are. But it's going to be hard for the right not to politically tack away from this
yeah.
without looking like actual murderers.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, that, like, that's just going to be, it's, this is changing. Once the economic pressure starts to unfold,
that's right.
then things start to change.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just talk about anything.
That's right.
But yeah. I think and that is something that regular people are sort of empowered to do
yes.
in a way that, thanks to social media largely, because it gives yeah. them the tools to communicate about it.
Yep.
But this is something that regular people are empowered to do that doesn't ruin their life or take up their whole life or whatever,
yeah.
but gives them access to authority. So, yeah. you know, in any case, we had the California State Democratic Convention this
yeah.
weekend, and you guys.
Crazy.
It is in shambles over there.
It is.
The State Democratic yeah. Party, and not just the State Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party as a whole, is in fucking shambles. And California is a good state to sort of test this out in, because since we have jungle primaries, our primaries are crazy bananas.
They're crazy, yeah.
And the obviously at the state convention, they voted on whether to endorse candidates
right,
in
that's
these
one of
primaries.
The things that they do. And that is, it is, it's not nothing either, because then, you know, your name is on mailers that go mm-hmm. out. You're sort of like, you can list, you can say it in advertisement. You can, and obviously in California, like, that means something.
Right.
So you really want those. And the biggest news of non-endorsement right. happening was that Dianne Feinstein did not get the endorsement.
And
it's also like, and you can tell how important it is, because for the first time in decades, she really went and tried to
yeah,
get it.
She tried to schmooze her way to getting it. And
yeah.
not only did she not get it, but Kevin DeLeon got 54%. You have to have 60% to get
right.
the endorsement.
So nobody got
no
endorsed.
No one got endorsed.
But if anybody got endorsed, it was certainly him.
Exactly.
Like,
he got,
he's not going to get an official one.
4% of the vote from
yeah.
the delegates.
And this, and after she went down there, like, schmoozing people, making conference calls. She had a scrambled egg breakfast with, with delegates. And, like, she was going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that
so,
is, I don't see how she doesn't drop out of this race.
I don't know.
I mean, I know that it's like, she's obviously proven that she's so stubborn that she's not going to do it.
Yeah, I don't
but
think
I'm just
she,
like,
she is either.
Why let your very credible political career go down
yeah.
in flames
this
way?
Well, I think that she probably thinks that, at least in a general now, she's fine, and polls show that. Now, that's just name recognition, so I would assume that if De Leon can get his name recognition up, that he's got a
yeah.
pretty good shot at it. But, you know, the people who are at the state party convention are obviously the people who Feinstein has sort of had her troubles with over her 28-year history in the Senate.
Yeah.
So it doesn't super shock me that she didn't get the nomination, but I don't think she's going to drop out, because I think that she still thinks that she can win, and she may very well.
It does shock me, actually, because as much as the state party is, you know, she's had 28 years to get up to shenanigans with them.
Yeah.
It shocks me that a candidate that establishment
yeah.
would poll this poorly with the people
true.
That are the establishment.
That's true.
Like, this is her base. I know that she might have personal situations going on at the state convention.
Sure.
But her base is, like, conventional run-of-the-mill establishment Democratic voters. She's
sure.
very moderate. She's
yeah.
much more moderate than anyone else we've been having in statewide elections in this
yeah.
state. And so politically, the people that are more aligned with her, the people that have, you know, had to move to the right, you know, like in that race for our last senator, we had two
right.
Democrats running, but one moved to the left and one moved to the right,
right.
to kind of differentiate
yeah.
themselves. Like, she is not the candidate who wins in a statewide election, politically speaking.
Correct.
And
I agree.
I would contend that the thing that keeps boring Democrats that nobody likes in office is usually party support. It's usually
yeah.
the Democratic Party
yes.
kind of pumps in for them.
Yeah.
If we are seeing this little interest in
yeah.
them coming in for her primary challenger,
yeah.
because there is a very good chance the two of them end up in the general.
Oh, they're going
and
to, yeah.
We're
sure.
saying 54% of the state Democratic Party is in bed with Leon already, or De Leon already, and
right.
37% is all that our senator of 28 years can muster.
Right.
That is a really shocking turn of events.
I know.
That is not like business as usual. And not only is it not business as usual, it's not a good picture for her.
No.
Because she politically is not what voters are looking for here.
No.
And if the party can't even back her up by being like, but you've heard of her.
Yeah.
Like,
well, and that's what De Leon said, too. And I thought that I read a quote of his and I thought it was so perfect, too, because he didn't name her by name. But obviously that's who he's running against. But he said something like, you shouldn't have to. When no one's looking, like, that's when he basically said, like, you shouldn't have to be told what California's values are. It's the things that you do in Washington when no one is looking, you know, and that's sort of like what
this
I think
is
everybody
what we're
has,
always saying.
And that's what we're always saying. And that's why I was like, so sort of like, oh my God, that's what we've been saying about her.
Yes.
It's like, she has sort of like, you know, she's, in the last few months, she has moved a little bit further to the left. And
right.
She has also, like, you know, she's now sort of touting what she's done for gun control. And I think that we can all, you know, she got applause at the convention for talking about that. And she should be applauded
for that.
Well,
that's her one
issue. Because
that's
her one issue. And I get that that's now an issue. So, like, you know, I would be talking about her if I were her, too. But, like, it's the, and that is the problem that I think that, like, Democrats are having with her, establishment or otherwise,
yeah. Yeah.
is that we have to, it's like we've said on this podcast a million times, we had to remind her that we didn't want a racist attorney general.
Right. That should have been obvious. Like, she shouldn't have needed a single phone call
right.
from us.
Just know.
Just know it. And don't be like, it makes it so much stronger if I can say people called. This is a state of 36 million people, and
yes.
you have as many phone lines as any podunk random senator from any
right.
dumb state.
We
can't call you.
right.
So just know what, like, it's obvious what our values.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need our calls.
Right.
You can be like, I can confirm.
Our other senator didn't need to know.
I can
we didn't have to tell her.
Confirm that the residents of my state do not want this because I just fucking know it. Because
right.
anyone with a brain in California knows it.
right.
Like, it doesn't, but
yeah
I think that this is a, like, shocking turn of events just for someone who's sort of like the oldest member of the establishment
right. I know. Yeah.
in the state, basically.
Yeah. The one thing that I will say, and it's still, obviously, you have to believe that there's more establishment people there because it is the state party convention and people sort of, like, know how to get there and, like, know the sort of, like, whole machinations
of it. These people
are
delegates.
They are. But the one thing that I will say is that the sort of, the Bernie crowd has made a huge push. And I know sort of like, because they also, I saw something fairly recently and I didn't even have a chance to like pull any of the, to even look at it. But I know they also adopted like the most progressive statewide party platform that has ever been adopted by any 50 states.
Your party convention, like they are establishment by nature of the fact that
they're there.
Right. Like it doesn't matter.
They're now the establishment, whether they were 2 years ago or not. They
not
are
the point,
now.
Right.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, they
sure.
are the establishment.
Yeah.
If this is what our current establishment is in California, then California has changed.
That's
away
right.
from Feinstein.
Right.
Like, that is, she, like, this is, for an establishment candidate to lose the support of the establishment means the establishment is different than it used to be.
Right.
And also that she is not as welcome as she used to be.
Right.
And she is the longest serving human being in history, basically.
Right.
Not even because she served longer than anyone else,
yeah.
just because she's older than everyone else.
Yeah.
But, I mean, she, like, that is a truly insane
right.
turn of events.
Yeah, if nothing else, she should resign because she should have some sort of realization that she no longer represents
the state of California.
The values that
she was elected into a California that also had elected Ronald Reagan to be
right.
the governor.
That's
like,
right.
This was a different time in California.
Yeah.
And California is not the same now.
Right.
You know, we went through that weird Gray Davis era. We
sure.
ended up getting redistricted thanks to a Republican, which is very confusing.
Right.
And now we're in a new era where we realize we're progressive.
That's right.
And we're just going with it.
That's right.
You know?
It's working out great.
It's working out
for
great.
Everybody.
Yeah. So in any case, there were other non-endorsements.
Right.
Most notably in the governor's race, which is a real shit show.
This one was fascinating.
It was fascinating,
to me.
But also not shocking. Well, some of it's shocking and some of it's not. I'll tell
yeah.
you what's not shocking to me.
sure.
What's not shocking is that only 9% supported Villaraigosa. And I'll tell you why. Because
right.
I don't think anyone actually likes Villaraigosa. His name keeps getting bandied around. For years, we've been hearing about, hey, he's going to run for president. He's going to run for governor. He's going to
yeah,
run for senate. He's going
to
run everywhere.
Yeah.
Nobody in LA has positive feelings about Villaraigosa. And anyone who does have feelings about him has negative feelings about
yeah.
him. Like, there's
right.
Villaraigosa is not someone who can be like, I was a great success as the mayor of Los Angeles and I'm built for bigger things.
Right.
He's a guy who's just always fucking in the news. He's shooming.
Right. He is. Yeah, he totally
he's
is.
He shooms.
The only thing that surprised me about his 9%, because here's how it shook out.
Oh, yeah.
We'll give you all of the votes.
Right.
So Newsom got 39%. John Chang got 30%. He's our current state treasurer.
Right.
Delaine Easton.
A person we've never heard of.
Got 20% of the vote. And then no endorsement got 3% of the vote. Villaraigosa only got three more times than no one. But the thing that shocked me about that was that in polling, Villaraigosa is really sort of like nipping at the Newsom heels. Right. So,
well, and there's been a lot of drama. There's a lot of accusations on both sides that they're both sneakily trying to destroy each other's campaigns.
Right, exactly. So, and most conventional wisdom is telling us that those are the two that are going to make it out of the jungle primary. It probably won't be a Republican, and it's probably going to be those two. And there are even people who sort of like point to signs that maybe Villaraigosa could win. Obviously, those signs are not coming from our new establishment.
Right.
Which, and you're right, it doesn't surprise me that the people, you know, of those 3,000 people that were there, he only got 9% of the vote. I'm surprised that Gavin Newsom didn't get
more,
and that Chang and Easton had so much more than he had. I guess that's really what my surprise was not even that he had 9%, but that...
I think, though, to me, this speaks as a bad omen to Villaraigosa.
Oh,
one of the reasons
too.
He's polling so high is because he has high name recognition, because he's been shooming all over town for decades.
Right.
And having, you know, as we've said, you know, we just said in the Feinstein race, like, she could blow Kevin DeLeon out of the water just because she has name recognition right now. He needs to get his name recognition up.
Right.
If Villaraigosa... Within the people who have all the name recognitions, they recognize all the names at the state party. Like, they know who all the players are.
Right.
If among the people who know all the names, he's polling at 9%, that's a sign to me that as the election kind of emerges and we start to kind of realize who the candidates are going to be, and we learn these names, we find out who Delaine Easton is.
You know,
John Chang is somebody that we know because we all voted for him to be treasurer, but we don't know that much about him politically. That's a sign to me that Villaraigosa is going to start losing support the moment anyone else's name is made familiar to people.
Yeah.
And we are really, you know, we're a few months out now.
Yeah.
So there is time for these people to get their name recognition up. But you don't want to be the candidate like Hillary Clinton who has 100% name recognition, so you can only lose support. You can't gain support. Villaraigosa is not going to gain a single extra person in support.
Correct.
At any point in this election,
he's
maxed out already at support, and it's not high enough yet to win.
He might
be able to give Newsom a run. And that's a challenge that him and Newsom have because they both have kind of similar name recognition.
Yeah.
But as far as how spoilers work in this race, if the Democratic establishment is largely behind Newsom, they are really not behind Villaraigosa. And his name recognition means that he can only decrease, you know, he can only lose support. Like, that is not a good position to be in.
Right.
For him or Dianne Feinstein.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah. One thing that is sort of like interesting about the jungle primary system and is starting to cause some real California hand-wringing.
Oh my God.
And it was sort of the backdrop for this convention because it was a concern because they were going to have to make they were voting on endorsements for like all of the congressional races as well. We could be living in a world where some of these races that we feel like we could perhaps flip, specifically Daryl Issa's and Ed Royce's, who are Orange County, and they're both retiring, and both of their districts were won by Hillary Clinton. We have so many candidates running in both of those districts that the Democrats may splinter enough votes to allow two Republicans to be who are on the ballot there. And there's nothing really to do about it because these people are, none of them want to drop out, obviously. They're in one, in the Ed Royce's district, there's eight of them and only one of them has any actual, has ever held elected office. So none of them really have any experience. That's not to say that some of them wouldn't be a good congressperson.
But we don't know.
There's just no... And some of them are also, like, fun... Some of them are rich and funding their own candidacies. So there's no reason... They don't need, like, the state party. They don't need the DCCC. They don't need any human support if they want to just keep running. I mean, so, like, they're... You know, if there's two Republicans in the race and they each get 25% of the vote and then there's eight Democrats who split the other 50% of the vote, then we don't get to have a Democrat on the ballot in the general election in a race that we could maybe win.
Yeah. No, it's
it's
yet another. We're learning about the jungle primary system as
we go.
We go, because we're kind of
right. I have loved it, because in many cases we get to have two Democrats running against each other in a general election.
Right. So I have been hating on it this whole time, because I think that it encourages people to not vote in the most important election of the year, which is the primary, because sure. people don't vote show up in the primaries,
totally.
And they do show up in the general, and to have all the important decisions made in the primary seems crazy to me.
Yeah.
But we're also a state where all our local elections have been taking place in March, so like we don't know what we're doing, you know? We're chaos. Yeah. But this is, I think, going to be, because at this point, you know, we were having issues like this before, but like I said, you know, like Brent said, they were mostly Democrats running against each other. But it has had other fallout for Democrats as well, because even when it is two Democrats, the race becomes very expensive.
Yes.
For Democrats, because they're funding both parties.
Well, and it often gets ugly.
It gets ugly, too. And it's not good for sort of building the Democratic brand in California.
No.
But this is like, every year there's a new challenge. And this year, I think, because it is really like meaningful to us to flip these seats, or it's important to us to flip these
right.
seats, we're going to realize that it's impossible to strategize with this dumb system.
Right. Well, and because we have talked on this podcast before, and this is an important thing to remember, because, you know, the Democrats actually think that they could maybe get the House back.
Yeah.
And they need to, what do they need to flip? Like something like 25 seats?
Yeah.
Five of those are within driving distance from you and I as we yeah. record this podcast.
Yeah.
And all five of them are potentially winnable. And at least a couple of them, we might not have anybody on the ballot on.
Right. And also, it means that people, like, if Brent and I want to go knock on doors in those places, it means that it's very hard to intervene into the primary, because
right.
we don't know what
don't
the
know.
Local issues are with their primary. I wouldn't presume to tell them what their
no.
local issues are. And then, in the general, we may just have no one to knock doors for.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
it's a ridiculous system.
I know.
I yeah. got lectured by someone in D.C. about how great jungle primaries are, and I was like, let me tell you, you
right.
don't live within the jungle primary system, but I
yeah.
can tell you all about the downsides, and
yeah.
there are numerous downsides.
Yeah.
And so I...
I'm sure the Republicans would finally feel good about it for, like, the first time ever if this happened, because, like...
But
you know,
I don't even like having two Democrats on the ballot. I don't think that's
no.
been great
no,
either.
No, I see... Right. It's sort of...
I think it's nice to let Democrats say, okay, this is the person we want representing us...
Right.
From the Democratic Party in this district, whatever. I don't think it's that great when, like, a kind of moderate and a kind of less moderate Democrat
no,
have to battle it
sure.
out. Like, how do you even differentiate?
Yeah.
It just means we all hate each other.
Right.
Nobody's helped by that.
Yeah, sure.
In any case, Rick Gates has pled guilty. We talked
right.
about that last week. And
yeah.
the Trump-Russia investigation is getting more exciting by the moment, because Manafort has now been indicted on extra counts.
Right. Well, and so was Gates.
And Gates was,
and
too.
And that is why I think is, you know, we won't spend a ton of time on this because we did talk about it last week. But, like, the fact that he officially, I think what's most important about this is not that he officially this week pled guilty. It's that it came a day after, like, dozens more charges against
yes.
the both of them came, which was an obvious attempt to turn up the heat on this.
Yes.
And
I am waiting with bated breath for Manafort to turn.
I know. And I'm
so
few,
excited
right,
for when he does.
Because he's still...
He's the big fish here.
Right. He's still pleading not guilty. And, you know, there's a few things to note that I sort of, like, had forgotten and relearned this week that make me think... Because last week we talked a little bit about how we sort of, like, felt like Gates probably obviously had the dirt on Manafort, which is why he was going to turn, because he
right.
had that information. And that's probably what he had, because who the fuck is this Gates guy anyway?
Right.
But... There are two important things, I think, that we should remember. One
yes.
is that after Paul Manafort was fired from the campaign, Gates stayed on at the behest of Steve Bannon
right.
all the way through the transition.
Mm-hmm.
So after the campaign, he was on the Trump campaign plane on Election Day.
Yeah.
Gates was. So he knows more than... I was thinking that maybe he knew. That's not to say I know what information he has, obviously, because
no.
I don't. But he has an insight into the rest of the campaign that so far really no one else does. Even Michael
yeah.
Flynn, who was sort of like, you know, obviously vaguely associated with it. He was an early sort of like in the campaign, you know, person who was, he spoke at the convention and then worked in the administration, obviously. But like Gates was sort of like a real like on the ground day to day, like working on the campaign through the entire, even after Manafort was gone. And the second important thing is that Manafort and Gates both came onto that campaign sort of like fairly early. It was before, I think they even had the, maybe they had the nomination locked up because it was, but it was before the convention because they brought Manafort in to sort of like be the heavy at the convention and to like get everything together. And it was right around the time that they were getting all of their like digital and social media up and running and like starting to like go out to Facebook and some of these places and like really sort of like, you know, interact with their voters. And we know from the previous indictment of all of the, you know, the 13 Russians from a couple weeks ago, that all of this Russian meddling was, that's where it was taking place.
Exactly.
So, like, he is going to know what was going on there. Like, he's going to have that information, too. So, and the fact that they filed more charges to turn up the heat really sort of, like, has me thinking in my conspiracy theory brain that this Gates guy... It might be something.
And it's also, it's kind of genius because in indicting these 13 Russian nationals, Mueller has made it much more difficult for the Republicans to claim that this investigation is not doing what it's supposed to do.
That's
And is not discovering things that are actually of important state security related, you know, information.
Yeah.
And to do this right on the heels of that, where you suddenly have a guilty plea from someone who has so much insight into the Trump campaign, as you've just created some credibility for the campaign, says to me that, A, that was an intentional order, obviously.
Right.
But, B, it means that it's going to be much harder to argue that these charges are not sort of, like, legitimate charges and that this investigation is not legitimate.
Yeah.
And so the GOP is kind of shut up at the moment. I'm sure they'll find a new argument.
I'm sure they will.
They have kind of shut up about this of late because
he took their narrative away.
He took their narrative away. Yeah.
Mueller, right. Yeah.
But so this the timing of all of this is very interesting.
Yeah. Oh boy.
My God. Meanwhile, CPAC was this week. And with all the craziness that's been going on, it was like not even notable enough to tell you about
it. And usually, every single time that CPAC has rolled around, like we have really like
we do like a whole
lived
podcast
for it on this CPAC. Podcast because you can do a whole podcast on it. And I'm sure we probably could have done a whole podcast on this. But yeah, it's like you said,
there's
like
too much
once all of once the administration is as insane as CPAC is, you just basically sort of like continue to cover government, and it seems like it's
forget CPAC. Although, so there was one notable thing that happened at CPAC, which is a panelist who slammed Trump for sexual harassment accusations.
Yeah.
Mona Charon. She is a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, which bills itself as Washington's, quote, premier institute applying the Judeo-Christian moral tradition to issues of public policy.
Mm, boy, that sounds terrible, but at least she's taking her job seriously, because I would contend that someone from that organization should be saying the type of things that she is saying.
That's so true.
But I would not guess that they would be saying the type of
especially
things
especially on a panel called hashtag us two left out by the left.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
But she said she was disappointed in the GOP for being hypocrites on issues of,
sexual harassment.
She talked about Roy Moore, and then she also called out the president.
Yeah.
And was like, you know, meanwhile, she was dealing with an audience that was shouting things like, not true, and prove it, when she talked about Roy Moore's accusations.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But she also was shit-talking Marine Le Pen.
Yeah, not Marine. Yes,
her niece.
Yes.
Because she was like, they're
she
Nazis.
She gave a speech.
Yeah, she gave a speech. Earlier. Well, it sounds
yeah.
like
she,
them.
Yeah, she was Nazis. Like, why? Yeah, she said, why are the Le Pens here?
Yeah, and like, while that's a fair question in the world, I feel like at CPAC, like, you get it.
Yeah,
they're Nazis,
where,
and they're at a Nazi convention. Like, that's where you go.
Yeah.
But Sharon was drowned out by loud boos for a lot of what she was saying.
Yeah.
And the crowd was in for some surprises, because there were other things that got booed as well, including a speaker who presented...
These were less surprising, though.
Yeah. Well, but I'm surprised that these were said
that they
CPAC.
Were there. Right. Yes.
A speaker got booed for presenting data on the benefits of immigration.
Boo!
And then another speaker implied Mexican immigrants have a lot in common with conservatives.
Boo!
Boos there. So it was tough going at CPAC for the slightly more on...
I don't know.
...point... speakers, panelists. I don't know what was going on there that they invited people who were going to say these things.
I don't know.
I love that they had a hashtag us two panel.
I know. So good.
To talk about what did they think was going to be talked
about
panel. On
that panel.
I
know.
Like, they invited women to talk about how they weren't being harassed, but have this has all been overblown. Like, what was the panel?
Couldn't tell you.
In any case, the closing ceremonies are tonight, we're missing them to record this podcast.
They've already happened.
They've already happened. I mean, we're missing the broadcast of
them.
Saw
photographs of it.
Yeah.
Some more K-pop,
following
apparently.
Adam Rippon on Instagram as well. Yeah. At this point, I'm following so many figure skaters on Instagram that it seems like I might just be a figure skater. Like, I might have no other interests or qualities.
Yeah.
It's like just food and then ice skaters.
Yeah.
On my Instagram at the moment.
Fine.
And I'm okay with it.
I was going to say,
what do I need other things for?
No.
But so in any case, big drama at the ladies figure skating
final.
Huge
drama, I guess.
Every year at the Olympics, some 15-year-old fucking upstart bursts in and steals the gold from the person who everyone thought was going to win the gold.
That's right.
And deserved it and put in the work.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
The Michelle Kwan of the world.
Sure.
Of that moment.
That's right.
You know, you have your Tara Lipinski.
Tara Lipinski.
You have your Sarah Hughes.
Sarah Hughes.
You have.
Yeah.
And now you have.
The difference this
you
year.
You have your Alina Zagitonis.
And if we're led to believe Tara Lipinski herself and Johnny Weir, the thing that was different this year and will be different for the foreseeable future is that it wasn't American this year. It was not an American.
No, it's going to be Russian.
It was a Russian.
I would contend that next time it might just be Russian.
Right.
And that was one of the things I said when they were talking about banning Russians from the Olympics. I was like, no one's going to watch the figure skating if you don't have Russians in there.
Right.
Like, that was just a bunch of people falling. I don't need to see the rest of the world's figure skaters. Yeah. I want to see the Russians.
Well, Americans had their worst showing in women's figure skating since the history of women's figure skating.
Well, and like...
truly, like, that's not...
No, that's not exaggeration.
That's statistically by where we placed. That is an accurate statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is... I was sort of like... I wasn't expecting our ladies to perform that well. I was there to see the
I thought maybe if Mariah had two triple axels in her, she's maybe inching at a bronze.
Yeah.
Like, on a good day.
Yes.
Like, that was... I felt like the shot that existed.
I felt like if she had landed her triple axel in her short program, I would have been like, she's on the...
Or maybe Brady Tennell backdoors her way to a bronze just because she never falls, but then she went falling around everywhere.
Well, I knew that she would never be able... Like, I knew she'd never hold it together. I just knew it. Like, those skaters... Like, it's one thing to be consistent. It's another thing to be... It's another thing if everyone else in the competition is able to be consistent. Like...
Sure. Well, that's the thing. You're not catching these Russians.
You're not going to catch these Russians. And one other person was always going to be consistent. That was the thing. Like, if there had been three medal slots up for grabs, and then, you know, everyone had fallen except two people, then those people could have medaled. Yeah. That would have been fine.
You needed...
But with only one slot...
Right, exactly.
...available.
Yeah. Because you didn't get the sense from the last year of competition that either of them were going to... have a meltdown.
No, and neither of them
because that did happen in the last Olympics. Like, the favored skater did, so, and it was again two Russians, like a 15-year-old and a 17-year-old.
Yeah,
and you know, I
we had a surprise winner in the last Olympics.
Yeah, we did.
Russian won.
I know. I personally contend that the wrong Russian won
this
year.
I do too,
as well. And I feel like not only do I contend that the wrong Russian won, but I feel like I'm uneasy about the trend of what could be coming from this particular wrong Russian winning. I didn't so much have feelings about the last wrong Russian winning.
That was just like a crazy...
But I do this time because I feel like there were some... Specifically the fact that she did all of her jumps in the last half of the program. And look, you and I saw her do that at the
European
Championships, and we were afraid that it was going to be terrible, and we watched it,
and we were delighted.
Like, well, that was really actually sort of fun, because she is actually, like, a really lovely skater. So, like, on some level, I'm not mad that she won, because she's, like, spectacular to watch. And, like, she is more artistic than, you know, like, the Tara Lipinskis of the world. Like, let's be honest. And Sarah Hughes, for that matter, too. Yeah. So, like, I don't have the same level of rage, but I have concern that in 2022, we're going to have to watch a bunch of less lovely skaters sort of spin and step sequence their way for 2.5 minutes and then just do 7 jumping passes in the last minute and a half.
Here's what I think might protect us from that. She was able to do that and keep her component score high because she is fun to watch.
Yes.
I don't think many skaters could sell 2 straight minutes of them skating without jumping. Without everyone losing interest and not watching the jumping.
Right.
But with a
10%
bonus, maybe it would matter.
And that's my concern. Like, I feel like that bonus has to get knocked down or done away with potentially entirely.
This has been a hot topic in figure skating Twitter, which is another Twitter, like New York Twitter, that I'm a part of. And I think there's been a lot of conversations because the other issue that everyone is worried about is that the trend to more rotations has actually made jumps smaller because you aren't able to jump high and then rotate. You have to start rotating off the ground. And because of that, these little girls who haven't developed yet can do quads. I mean, there's little girls in Russia who are doing quads right now and they're working on the triple axels or whatever.
Sure.
It's one thing when Mariya Nagasu does a triple axel because she is a grown woman,
right,
who is
exactly.
having to propel herself off the ground and do a huge jump in the air to get all those rotations
That's
in.
Right.
That was what Midori Ito had to do a triple axel. When you don't have any hips or boobs and you're just like a toothpick of a person, you can just sort of toss yourself. I mean, there's that skater
Carol Lipinski was doing, you know, she wrote that op-ed where she sort of like made it sound like she had invented doing a triple-triple combination, which was like, questionable. I mean, she was certainly known for it and it wasn't something that everybody was doing at the time. And it was certainly
But she was also 15 years old.
And it certainly was a thing that probably would have won Michelle Kwan that Olympics.
Right.
But, you know, she also wasn't getting any more than, like, 1 millimeter off of the ice. Like, sometimes it didn't even look like she had actually physically left it.
And there was that like, Japanese skater in this Olympics who skated beautifully. She's a beautiful skater, and she skated a clean program, but she only gets a millimeter off the ice. And so because of that, her jumps are not that impressive.
Right, exactly. Especially compared to... And the other thing... And this is like a classic figure skating problem, and it's always has been in the scoring, whether it's point-based or whether it's like feelings-based out of 6.0 like, based, is that like there's always scoring that is an imaginary scoring
all
portion.
All the scoring
of it,
has been imaginary in this whole Olympics.
Exactly, because like, you know, I was enraged that it wasn't a three-way tie after the short program because the best short program was... in third place, and also it had the biggest jumps.
Yeah, but that's so. There's been some discussion on ice skating Twitter about whether there should be scoring that rewards people for doing big and impressive jumps.
Because, I mean, I think there's, you know, in ice dancing, they're scoring sort of like how deep a knee bend is.
Yeah.
Like, let's figure skating, like let's score off of the ice you're getting.
Did you watch the gala yesterday? Because one thing that Hanyu did in his performance in the gala was he did a delayed double axel. And when you see those done, they look so much better than triple axels.
Where I did not see
it's
that.
Basically you just go up and you don't start rotating until you're at the top of the arc. And so because of that, the jump is huge and it looks beautiful. It's a really beautiful jump. Unlike a lot of these jumps are not beautiful. Quads are not beautiful. Like triple axels aren't even really beautiful unless you do a huge one.
Right.
But those are really like pretty jumps because it looks graceful because you go up, you're kind of flying when you literally look like you're flying.
Yeah.
And he did one and Scott Hamilton was like losing his shit in the commentator because he was like, no one does those anymore and they're so cool.
Yeah.
And they're hard, but they're hard to do. And if you're only scoring people on the basis of rotations, no one is ever going to lose points doing a delayed axel as opposed to doing 700 rotations or whatever.
Right.
But the other thing I think, well, I have one more theory about what might prevent ice skating from turning into just everyone jumping terribly at the end, which is Alina Zagitova is maybe the only skater in that competition who could jump without much prep. She could just go into jumps. So she could do choreography directly into her jumps that didn't look like she was prepping to do a jump.
Yes.
That's because she's 15 and she's bouncy and whatever.
Sure.
That she'll lose that skill.
She did. They showed in her practice session where she did 5 triples in a row. And they were basically where she never sort of like, she was just basically taking off from the same leg. Weren't they loops?
Yeah, they were loops. She did 5 triple loops in a row. And the thing that I found very notable about that was that she traveled for most of them. Usually when you do combination jumps, you'll notice the 3 jump. At the end of the jumps, you're just jumping in a circle.
You're not moving, right, yeah.
And, like, even, like, when I try to do combination jumps and I'm doing a single jump into a single jump, like, I find that I cannot even, move on the second jump.
Right. Yeah.
So to do 5 of those in a row where only, like, the last one was really done in place was wild to me.
Yeah.
Because you shouldn't be able to move for that many of those jumps in a row.
Yeah.
But that's... She was, like, especially gifted at doing those jumps in a way that seemed kind of effortless and easy, and she didn't prep for it, and she just kind of popped into the air, and then she popped down. And because of that, she was able to do choreography while doing these jumps, whereas no one else in that whole competition could have done that.
Yeah.
That said, I felt like I found her delightful at the European Championships.
Yeah.
I found that program delightful, and I found it less so at this Olympics.
Yeah.
She looked tired. She looked not into it. She kind of looked like she was just sort of lost and wandering. And I get it. It's been a long 2 weeks and be exhausting to be her.
Yeah.
But I felt like
she also looked really smug when they cut to her after she realized that she had won. She probably didn't know necessarily that she was looking at a camera that was being broadcast to all of Earth at the time.
She's a 15-year-old idiot. Like, what does she know?
Exactly.
I feel bad anytime a 15-year-old upstart comes and ruins everything for someone who's been putting in the work.
Right, I know. All of Earth thinks that...
Medvedev.
You know, Medvedev. Yeah, that she was robbed.
Yeah.
So it's like, what? All she did was show up and try her best, and she won. What do you want her to do?
Exactly.
Like, she's supposed to turn in her medal.
Right, exactly. Like, yeah. I feel like also, though, this is kind of like, this is what the ice dancing results were sort of like, where this team performed this beautiful dance, and then the favorites won, because the favorites have to win in order for everyone to feel good about life. That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
Like, and in this, you needed an exciting end because this was where it was heading. And there's always a dumb 15-year-old that wins the women's event at the Olympics.
That's right. And
that's why I gave it up for ice dancing. That's why ice dancing is my new favorite event at the Olympics.
Sure.
At least then it's just openly about feelings.
That's true.
Yes.
The other thing that sort of like makes me feel bad for, I can never say her name, right?
Medvedeva. I've been practicing a lot.
I appreciate that. Is that, you know, so many people are sort of like, oh, well, she's 17. This was this case at the last Olympics when we had a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old or an 18-year-old and a 15-year-old. And
in Russia, that doesn't buy you much time.
I was going to say, I dare you, you'll be able to because you're figure skating obsessed, but I dare you, dear listeners, to A, name either one of those two people, and B, tell me whether they were at this Olympics or not.
Here's
because
one
A,
thing.
You can't name their names,
right.
And B, they were not at this Olympics because there are new 15 and 17-year-olds at this Olympics.
The girl who actually won that Olympics was never someone who I think was going to be the best on the world stage.
Sure.
The girl who was supposed to, Lipnitskaya,
she
actually left skating for a while because she was anorexic.
I know, yeah.
So
I think she actually technically retired. I mean,
well,
she's
she
young
retired,
enough that she'd come back, but I mean, like...
She retired.
Yeah.
She left skating in that she literally left the sport of skating. She now skates, but it's not competitively.
But I'm just saying, like, you know, if you're out there, you know, being like, oh, well, she can get them next time. It's hard to make the Russian Olympic team.
Yeah.
Guys.
It's not Italy. Carolina Kostner has been flying solo for years.
We should take her.
A beautiful skater.
Is what we should do. She should come here.
Yeah. I would happily have her at 35 competing for our Olympic team.
I know.
Just to be there. Just to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, but that's, she's able to, the countries where you're able to be an institution for that long are countries where there's not much of a bench.
Right, exactly.
Because.
Yeah. Johnny Weir is not happy about that either. He basically sort of like advocated for, you know, taking all of the American ladies, you know, out back and shooting them like horses because.
I just like, send them to train in Canada.
Well, right?
Canada gets it.
Yeah.
Canada knows what they're doing.
I know.
Everyone trains in Canada. Everyone in the world trains in Canada, first of all. It's not just. That
sure.
Canadians train in Canada.
Yeah.
If you're wondering, all of the world teams train in Canada.
Yeah.
Like, that's, Canada is where you go to train. That's why the same coaches are just at every, you know, wearing different jackets. All of, Brian Orser is coaching everyone in the Olympics.
That's right.
You know, like, he's in Canada.
Yeah.
You got to go
to Canada.
There
was that whole ice dancing thing where they showed where, like, that woman was, like, just kept removing, like, the different countries' jackets.
And not only was she... coaching that many teams there.
She coached the top two, right? Didn't
no.
she?
No. See, this is what the drama of it was. She had coached the top two in the last Olympics,
coached.
And they left her to go to a new coach who now has the top two teams.
Oh.
They are like kingmakers. Of the top four teams, three of them were coached by these new upstart coaching people.
Fascinating.
They're not upstarts, obviously, but
sure.
the Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer new coach also trains Papadakis and Cicerone and also trains Hubble and Donahue.
Yeah.
They placed in the top, all three of them placed in the top four. The only people of the old coach that they all used to train with in Michigan who is still in the top three is the Shibutanis because they train with her. But she coaches every other skater who placed anywhere in that Olympics.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So there's a new game in town. That's what's been so exciting about the whole ice dancing thing.
Yeah.
Is that Tessa Virtue and Scott Moyer actually changed coaches.
Oh. Fascinating.
It turned into a whole... It didn't stop them from having crazy sexual chemistry, apparently, on ice.
One more thing before we get to ice dancing, because I want you to tell me all the conspiracy theories about them online.
Yeah.
Is that because you talked about the gala from yesterday.
Mm.
If you do like figure skating and you didn't watch the gala, do yourself a favor and go watch Zagitova's gala performance.
Oh, my God.
Wherein she is in a tiger costume that is... way sluttier than anyone should be looking in public, let alone as a 15-year-old. It's like a cat suit, basically.
Yeah.
And
with a,
like,
huge nude cutout all the way down.
All the way down. And then basically the back is open entirely. Yeah. And she's like dancing to some sort of like tribal music of some sort. There's a candle involved that she sort of like sits on her stomach at the very end of it, like she's like laid back on the ice. It's wildly insane for starters, and certainly inappropriate, but in a way that I feel like you should probably be watching.
Yeah. Brent texted me and was like, am I just like an old person or is this? And I was like, no, it's inappropriate. It's so obviously inappropriate that we immediately move past it.
Right. I know.
Like you can't.
But then I went back to it at the end and I was like, was that inappropriate? But you're right. Yeah. You can't. Because you responded, you were like, is the sky blue or something like that? Like, yes, it is.
Yeah, of course it's inappropriate. I also believe I responded, is wood made of wood?
Yes. Which is not a saying.
No.
For I feel I like now obvious reasons that you said it aloud. But yes, point taken.
Just like, is metal made of metal? Like, of course it was inappropriate. Mm-hmm. Because it was so obviously inappropriate, I felt like I didn't need to think about it much.
Right.
I was just like, oh, this is
inappropriate. I felt like I had to think about it twice.
Yeah, you thought about it extra. This is what happens. This is that was the Iowa in you going back and worrying about her. I was just like, this is inappropriate. Now I'm in it for the drama.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me about...
Okay.
Tell me everything.
So for years, people have been speculating about Tessa Virtue and Scott Moir.
Yeah.
And that's because they have like crazy chemistry on ice.
Well, they do have crazy chemistry on ice, but also they are looking for any opportunity
to touch each other for
her vagina to be in his face on the ice.
Well, and also like,
I'm not going to mince words about it because that's what's happening.
They touch each other constantly. Like in if you watch them as they're waiting to go out for a performance, they do like this very intimate pre-performance hug that is too intimate to be doing with your platonic friend that you ice dance with.
Interesting.
Like if the Shibutanis did any of the pre-dance rituals that they do, we would fire the Shibutanis from the world. Like it's like no wonder the Shibutanis can't fucking win.
I know.
Because they can't pretend to be having sex with each other on the ice because they're brother and sister.
That's right.
So in any case.
Yeah. They're having to find emotion elsewhere.
Did
to a Coldplay song.
Something, right, exactly. I did something that I felt like I, for years, had been thinking I should do, but just hadn't gotten around to, which was watch the Tessa and Scott reality show on some Canadian TV network. It's the most aggressively Canadian show on the planet. There's something so Canadian about it that
people doing nothing and being vaguely nice while doing it.
Yes. It's like, there's no plot. There's no action. There's no personality. No one is doing anything. Sure. Everyone is just sort of like chuckling uncomfortably and like looking at each other.
Yep.
And it's sort of like Laguna Beach style. So all of the conversations are like vaguely contrived.
Yeah.
And so it'll be like, let's sit in a row at this restaurant and talk about this very contrived thing.
Yeah.
But despite that, I feel like I have some new insight into them because I watched the show, which is the show. You can tell what the gaps in the show are.
I see.
It's very obvious. And
are the gaps in the show the moments where they are having sex with each other?
Well, that's what I was watching to find out. And I now believe that they are not.
Oh.
I found them so much more awkward and like emotionally disconnected than I expected to.
Is she his beard?
I also wondered that.
Okay.
I don't know that I got a convincing answer to it either way. Okay. Now, one thing we know is that
I feel like I got a convincing enough answer from it from the shirt that he chose to wear in the long dance.
I have new perspective on that, which is that he is just a fucking ham.
Okay.
Like, he is a ham.
Okay.
And he's a handful, too. Like, he's annoying.
Oh,
he's
interesting.
Cock-blocking her at every turn.
Oh, my.
Where, like, every time another man talks to her, he, like, when they're good friends with Patrick Chan, Patrick Chan is a character in the show. When she invites Patrick Chan out to, like, go hang out at some competition they're at or whatever, like, he makes a joke, like, you didn't go through me first kind of joke. Meanwhile, he is in what is definitely a sham relationship with some girl from home.
Oh.
And here are some things I didn't realize. Scott Moir is a fucking redneck. He's a Canadian redneck. He, like...
Fascinating.
Likes... And now that I know that, his aggressive Canadian accent makes more sense to me.
Mm.
He has... too Canadian in an accent. Like, his accent is so Canadian that you're like, are you from, like, deep Canada?
Right.
Like, this is not Toronto Canadian. He's you're like not a worldly Canadian.
Impersonating
a Canadian. Person. Yes, exactly. And I was like, what would I think that person would be in Canada? And I was like...
He's like a person... A redneck. He's like an American West Virginian.
Yeah, he's an American West Virginian Canadian.
Right.
Yeah. And so, and the show kind of tries to play up that she's, like, sort of, like, preppy and, you know, golfs with her family. And he goes and shoots guns with his friends or whatever. And, like, neither of those things are true, clearly. But something about the way that, like, A, clearly they have something going on that is more than just a friendship, that is more like that they like rely on each other in like a weird way.
Yeah.
That is something we would normally associate with people in a relationship.
Right.
For sure. But there was something so uncharismatic about their, or like lacking in chemistry about their speaking time together.
Right.
That I was like, unless they never speak in real life and only have silent sex.
Right.
Then they are not having sex.
They just figure skate and fuck.
Exactly. That's it. That's all they'd be able to do.
Sorry, Carla.
In any case, there are so many crazy... I also went deep into the rumor mill on the web about them.
Sure.
Because suddenly everyone, after that free dance, everyone was obsessed with asking this question. And I was happy about it because some people did some roundups of the rumors on the internet. Good. Because I've been... After the last Olympics, I also went into sort of like a weird deep dive about this because that was also what got discussed after the last Olympics. And I didn't really land anywhere.
Sure.
There's like... whole communities of people that are like writing fan fiction about them. There's a rumor that they have a secret love child that people are going out of their way to like explain via pictures that make no sense. Like they're like, she's showing a baby bump here. And you're like, she's literally showing nothing. Like
she's not.
She couldn't be fitter.
Right.
Like this is a flat stomach thing.
That's probably people. That's why they had to take a couple years off probably,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
There's a whole narrative.
There's a whole narrative.
Yeah.
But there are also just like infinite clips of them touching each other behind the scenes where you're like, don't
why are you
touch
doing
your
that?
Friend that way. Like he doesn't need a pat on the ass. Like that's,
right.
He's your friend that you ice dance with.
Yeah.
Like this makes, so in any case, my theory is that they are going to have a torrid affair at some point.
Sure.
But it's going to be after years of denying all right. this to each other.
Yeah.
Although,
well,
it has been fascinating just from a care. It's been fascinating for one reason, which is that I have never been so fascinated by such boring people. Like finding what's interesting in people that are being, I'm sure they are not boring in real life, but this on the
right.
show, because it's so Canadian, they just seem so bland.
Right.
And I have never, like, I've been finding myself grasping onto, like, really minute details about,
right,
like, qualities
sure.
they might have
right.
that has been kind of, like, an interesting character study.
Oh, boy.
In any case, that's the news this week.
That's it. Oh, wait, no.
Oh,
there was a streaker.
There was a streaker at the Olympics at a speed skating event.
Yeah.
At the men's 1,000-meter speed skating event. This guy, Mark Roberts.
A professional streaker.
Who streaks everywhere. He's been streaking at the Super Bowl. He's gone to over 500 events.
Yeah.
He, showed up in a pink tutu and then with peace and love written on in huge letters
on
his chest.
Tried to do like a ballet figure skating routine.
Wasn't wearing skates. Fell right down.
Exactly. Turns out, he found out quickly that ice is slick.
Right.
Much like all of the American ladies figure skaters
exactly.
found out this week. oh, God. So
there it is.
Peace and love.
Peace and love.
I guess, sure.
Why
right?
not? Yeah. Show up with a pink tutu.
Yeah.
Spread the message of peace.
Yeah.
That's the news this
week.
Now you got it all.
There it is.
We'll be back next week with other news.
But no,
not about
no,
the Olympics.
No Olympics.
This is. I'm going to have some thoughts about the Olympics, I feel like, next week.
We'll remember something that we forgot.
Yeah. There's no way that we're... And also, the Paralympics start now.
Oh, yeah.
And I love the Paralympics, actually.
I've never watched one
I
second
only
of the
found out how great they are because I went to the Paralympics one year.
Oh, that's right. I feel like I remember
and
this.
And it was way more fun than the regular Olympics.
Sure.
The Paralympics are so much more impressive. Because, like, I went to the Summer Paralympics, and the Summer Paralympics is, like, these are people who are, like, really fast-trained runners who don't have legs.
Right.
Can you imagine being, like, I'm a professional runner,
right,
don't have any legs? Like, I saw the most exciting game of wheelchair basketball I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't often get to watch wheelchair basketball.
No.
Like, there were just so
true.
Many
yeah,
exciting
sure.
sports, and they have wheelchair hockey. Like,
yes. Oh, they've been showing that
they've been
in
showing
commercials,
that. Exactly.
actually, which is, That's, yeah, it looks fascinating.
There are so many exciting Paralympics, Winter Games sports that you have probably never seen and will not ever get to see in real life that I am excited about that. So we'll see if there's any. But it's going to be just like less covered. So it's not going to be like we're going to have favorites going in or anything.
They'll all be more exciting than curling. I can tell you that much.
So
we won a gold medal in curling.
That's right. Yeah, that was a big deal yesterday. Still don't know why. Still don't know the rules of curling.
No.
Still wonder why five guys that look like they just drink beer together on Sundays could possibly be...
You know why they look like that?
Because that's what they do.
Nailed it.
And on that note, we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.